I welcome all the devotees to the daily class on Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is. In our journey through the Bhagavad Gita, today we have reached chapter 4, first shloka, and we'll go through the second shloka and stop there. So today we'll discuss two shlokas from the chapter 4, Srimad Bhagavad Gita. So verse number 4.1 goes like this. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Imam Vivasvate Yogam Proktavanaham Avyayam Vivasvan Manave Praha Manur Ikshavakave Bravet. The personality of Godhead, Lord Shri Krishna, said, I instructed this imperishable science of yoga to the sun god Vivasvan, and Vivasvan instructed it to Manu, the father of mankind, and Manu in turn instructed it to Ikshvaku. Purport. Herein we find the history of the Bhagavad Gita traced from a remote time when it was delivered to the royal order of all planets, beginning from the sun planet. The kings of all planets are especially meant for the protection of the inhabitants, and therefore the royal order should understand the science of Bhagavad Gita in order to be able to rule the citizens and protect them from material bondage to lust. Human life is meant for cultivation of spiritual knowledge in eternal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the executive and all planets are obliged to impart this lesson to the citizens by education, culture and devotion. In other words, the executive heads of all states are intended to spread the science of Krishna consciousness so that the people may take advantage of this great science and pursue a successful path utilizing the opportunity of the human form of life. For this verse especially, there is a long explanation purport, so we'll stop here. Later there are some technical details about the length of time that has passed in the Kali Yuga, the Dwapar Yuga, the Treta Yuga and like that. And we can read it later also. I'll also go through the translation and purport of text 2 that we are supposed to cover today. So text 2 is, Evam Parampara Praptam Imam Rajarshayo Viduhu Sa Kale Neha Mahata Yogo Nashtaha Parantapa. Translation. This supreme science was thus received through the chain of disciplic succession, and the saintly kings understood it in that way. But in course of time, the succession was broken, and therefore, the science as it is appears to be lost. Purport. It is clearly stated that the Gita was especially meant for the saintly kings because they were to execute its purpose in ruling over the citizens. Certainly, Bhagavad Gita was never meant for the demoniac persons who would dissipate its value for no one's benefit and would devise all types of interpretations according to personal whims. As soon as the original purpose was scattered by the motives of the unscrupulous commentators, there arose the need to re-establish the disciplic succession. 5,000 years ago, it was detected by the Lord himself that the disciplic succession was broken. And therefore, he declared that the purpose of the Gita appeared to be lost. In the same way, at the present moment also there are so many editions of the Gita, especially in English, but almost all of them are not according to authorized disciplic succession. There are innumerable interpretations rendered by different mundane scholars, but almost all of them do not accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Although they make a good business on the words of Shri Krishna. The spirit is demoniac because demons do not believe in God but simply enjoy the property of the Supreme. Since there is a great need of an edition of the Gita in English as it is received by the parampara or the disciplic succession system, an attempt is made herewith to fulfill this great want. Bhagavad Gita, accepted as it is a great boon to humanity. But if it is accepted as a treatise of philosophical speculations, it is simply a waste of time. Hare Krishna. So we'll try to understand what is the significance of these two verses that have been presented by Lord Krishna at this point in the Bhagavad Gita. Just till now, in the previous chapter, there was a long discussion on what is lust and how it affects us and how to overcome it. And the last verse in the previous chapter, that is the third chapter, mentioned evam buddhe param buddhva. So in this way, with the help of transcendental knowledge, by equipping yourself with spiritual intelligence, deliberate spiritual intelligence, you can conquer this enemy, kama rupam durasadam. So all of us have experience of how difficult it is to conquer the negative emotions that we have. What to speak of lust? We are even suffering from anger, greed, envy, pride, illusion also. So the last chapter just ended with Lord Krishna explaining in detail what is lust, what are the ill effects of lust, and he also gave a solution. He just didn't stop at explaining the problem. So the last verse explained how with the help of fine intelligence based on spiritual values, these negative emotions that all of us are suffering from and would want to overcome can be overcome with the help of spiritual intelligence. So now, as a succession to it, as a continuation of that theme, he is presenting that, yes, you know, if we read that, if we hear that, we understand, yes, we would like to overcome these negative emotions. So how to do that? You have presented that we need spiritual intelligence. Now we want to know how to get that. We want to overcome these negative emotions. So that's why this chapter then starts that how is this knowledge received? If somebody wants to receive knowledge that is capable of giving us spiritual intelligence, then how is it supposed to be received? What is the manner in which it can be received? And so he explains that previously also, just like I'm instructing to you, Arjun, previously also I have instructed this same science, same set of values that I'm telling you, to the sun god Vivaswan. Vivaswan instructed it to Manu, the father of mankind, and Manu in turn instructed it to Ikshvaku. So this is the system of receiving spiritual knowledge, that the supreme teacher, the Supreme Lord himself, who is the repository of all knowledge, who is the source of all knowledge, reveals that knowledge to somebody who is a trusted person, on whom he has enough faith that this person is not going to twist whatever I am teaching him. This person surely is a student, because that's why he is receiving the knowledge from the Supreme Lord. This student in turn becomes mature by practicing that knowledge, not by hurting that knowledge, but by practicing that knowledge. Then he becomes a teacher, and this teacher in turn, just like he has received his knowledge from a teacher, he himself assumes, accepts the post of a teacher, and then transmits that knowledge transparently to another student of his. That student in turn also accepts the knowledge, practices the knowledge, becomes mature in the proper understanding of that knowledge, then he also becomes a teacher and then transmits that knowledge. Evam parampara praptam. So this is called parampara. One man receives knowledge, practices that knowledge, understands the different aspects of knowledge, realizes the knowledge, and then gives it to other person. That person in turn receives it gratefully, practices it, realizes it, and then gives it to another person. So this is the way in which Lord Krishna has mentioned here, explained here, that this is the way in which transcendental knowledge is transferred or accepted. Somebody would doubt, or somebody would ponder over these things, that if this is the way in which transcendental knowledge is received, is this some special way? Is this some out of the normal way? in which transcendental knowledge is received, or all other systems of knowledge are also received in this way. Let's examine the other knowledge that we have and the ways in which it is received. Suppose somebody of us sitting here wants to become an engineer, let's say. Where does he go? He goes to an engineering college. In an engineering college, he has some lecturers, he has some professors who are teaching him that particular branch of engineering. So suppose he is intending to study mechanical engineering, so he joins that department and he has teachers that teach him mechanical engineering. Obviously, needless to say, the teacher who will teach that student, that particular student, mechanical engineering has to be a mechanical engineer himself. A computer engineer will never be deputed, will never be assigned to teach mechanical engineering to a prospective mechanical engineer, a person desirous of knowing mechanical engineering. Similarly, a mechanical engineer, however expert he may be, will never be deputed to teach computer engineering to a student desirous of studying computer engineering. So this is accepted, that a student desirous of learning mechanical engineering will always learn from a teacher who himself has to be a proper bona fide mechanical engineer, and probably more. Maybe he has, that's the minimum that he has, and on top of it maybe he has some additional qualifications also, no doubt about that. But his bare minimum qualification has to be very nice understanding of mechanical engineering, which will come if you study it nicely, if you practice it nicely. And a student who wants to learn computer engineering will also be taught by a person who himself has to be a computer engineer. Now, let's go a step back. These teachers whom we have identified, the teacher for mechanical engineering department, he has to be a mechanical engineer, and the teacher for computer engineering department, he himself has to be a computer engineer. So going a step back, we'll just try to see how this particular person who is right now in the position of a teacher, how did he come to that position of a teacher? Surely enough, at one point of time, he was himself also a student. One point of time, he was also a young boy and desirous of learning mechanical engineering or computer engineering respectively. He also must have gone to a college and joined the respective department, and there must have been a teacher already who taught him mechanical engineering, who taught him computer engineering. For a doctor, there must also be a doctor previous to him who taught him the different aspects of medicine. Going a step back, that person himself has to be a doctor, that person himself has to be a mechanical engineer, and so on. You can fill in the blanks. So we observe that for me to teach you something, I have to know my subject matter very nicely. And how do I know it nicely is, I have to receive it from a proper person myself. So suppose I am teaching you ABC, so I have to learn ABC from some person who knows ABC himself. And how does he know ABC? He has to learn it from another person who himself has learnt it from somebody, and so on and so forth. So even when it comes to education around us that we are not very much used to, because spiritual life is something that is not very natural for us in this age at least. Most of us came to spirituality, you know, wandering here nearby, saw this beautiful temple, came in, or somebody dragged us here, you know, just come for darshan and like that. Very few of us have come to this temple searching out for answers. What is the answer to these problems in life? How to understand this existence that I'm living in? Who am I? Who is God? Very few of us. So for most of us, there is a certain level of prodding that has to be done. There is a certain level of pushing that has to be done, that please practice spirituality. So it's very important for us to understand that not only in the field of spirituality, but also in the field of mundane education also, engineering, medicine, architecture, commerce, science, wherever you go, zoology, botany, chemistry, anywhere you go, a student learns from a teacher, and the teacher himself has to learn from another teacher, and so on and so forth. So the standard system of gaining knowledge is always like this, evam parampara praptam. Somebody mentions it clearly and somebody does not mention it clearly. That's a different issue. So Krishna is making it very clear. If you try to read this textbook on your own, You will just see it as some letters of ink printed on good paper. The real knowledge will not be revealed unless you approach a teacher. And this also is not a very new concept. There are colleges and universities and books are available in the bookshops. But still, a person buys those books from a bookshop but does not head home to learn from the books. Instead, with those books, he goes to a college and learns from a proper teacher the knowledge that is presented in that textbook. So similarly, just like you have other textbooks, this is a textbook of spirituality. This is a manual of how to lead a proper life in this world. This is Bhagavad Gita. Here it is explained in the first verse that I have instructed this science to Vivasvan, who is the sun god. He instructed to Manu, the father of mankind, and Manu in turn instructed it to Ikshvaku. In the second verse also, it is explained, evam parampara praptam, imam rajarshayo vidu, sa kaleniha mahata, yoga nashta parampara, parantapa. So here also, in the second verse also, there is a word called Rajarshi. And the first verse also mentions three Kshatriyas, the sun god, Manu and Ikshvaku. So there is a certain common theme in these two verses that Krishna is very much eager to instruct this spiritual science to the administrative class. I deliberately paused because spiritual science generally is supposed to be understood, or generally the understanding of common people is that spirituality is for certain people who are most probably not good for anything else. They are not good for their duties in the common sphere of life. And, you know, they are not good for anything else. So what to do? Let them learn some spirituality. Let them learn some mantras. Let them do some pujari seva in the temple. His Holiness Devamrit Swami Maharaj is one of the prominent sannyasis in ISKCON. And he had come here some years back and he was mentioning how in the course of teaching spirituality in the Western world, he is preaching in Australia and New Zealand. He one day came across an Indian person there in Australia. And while talking to him, he asked him about his background and he said he comes from a very pious, devoted family of pujaris in one of the most prominent temples in South India. I won't name it because then, you know, certain other conceptions come into our mind. But one of the most prominent temples in South India. And one of the main pujaris in this temple is this student's father. And the student is now in the Australia, down under, studying. So while talking to him, Maharaj asked him, how come you are here? And he said, so right from my childhood days, I was very bright. Bright in the sense, intelligent. So I always used to score a lot of good marks in my school and like that. So when it came to my graduation time, when I had to choose a college, my father said, so you are such an intelligent person. You are so well equipped with intelligence. You don't waste your time in this pujari business. What is there in worshipping the Lord? But what you do is, you go to the West and get a good degree there. So this son, he asked that, you want me to go there and I am the elder son. Usually it is the eldest son who takes the charge of the deities, worship of the deities in any temple. So he asked naturally that if I am going there, then who will take care of the deities? He said, I have that younger son for that. And that younger son happened to be a dullard, not very intelligent, not very bright, always failing in all subjects. So for that I have this son. But you are very intelligent, you go to the West. So Devamrit Maharaj was saying how it is a common misconception in the minds of common man that if you are intelligent, if you are bright, then you are good, you are suited for something that is to be done in a field that is away from spirituality. Go for the material sciences, go for chemistry, physics, biology, something like that. Do some research there. And if you are dull, then you come to the path of spirituality. That's why I gave this example that no, these two things are not applicable or they are not true. Even in the field of spirituality, here we see Lord Krishna wants the spiritual science to be understood properly by the leaders of society. He instructed to Ikshva, he instructed to Vivasvan, Vivasvan instructed to Manu, Ikshvaku. Second verse also he says, Imam Rajarshayo Vidu. Rajarshi is composed of two words, Raja and Rishi. So a Raja, a king, who is a very saintly king, who is a very pious king, who is a very cultured king. Such kings, according to Krishna, are worthy of receiving the spiritual signs. In both these verses, Krishna has not mentioned any sage, any saint who has renounced the world, who stays in some hermitage, in some forest. He has not instructed this supreme spiritual science. Even in this present case, he is talking about history now. But whom is he talking to presently at this moment? He is talking to Arjun. Who is Arjun? Arjun is not a person in the renounced order. Arjun is a king. Arjun is a prince. Arjun is a kshatriya. Arjun is an administrator. So one very nice point or important point to understand is, spirituality is not for people in the renounced order only. It is certainly for them, but it is also for all of us. It is for everyone, whoever you are, wherever you are. Spirituality is for us. And the more important you are, the more responsible your position is, the more imperative it is for us to understand spirituality. Elsewhere in the Bhagavad Gita, it is mentioned by Lord Krishna, Yadyad acharati shreshthas, tattad eva itaro jana, sayat pramanam kurute, lokastad anuvartate. Whatever acts a great man does, common man follows. And whatever standards he sets by his own example, that is the standard that is looked up to by the common man. This is a common observation. So, if the important men in society, if the most intelligent men in society become spiritual, what will happen to them? As seen in the previous chapter, they will get spiritual intelligence based on this knowledge. With the help of spiritual intelligence, what has Krishna promised? Evam buddhe param pudva, samstapyadmanam atmana, jahi shatrum mahabaho, kama rupam durasadam. This formidable enemy, durasadam, of lust and anger, pride, envy, illusion, which is tormenting our minds today. People are suffering in stress today. Currently we are undergoing a spell of recession, economic recession. People are having a tough time. The drug that is being sold the most in medicine shops today at this moment are sleeping pills. People are losing their sleep. And who are these people who are losing sleep? They are not the saintly people. They are not hermits in their ashrams who are losing sleep. It is you and me who are out here in this world trying to make a living. So it is we who need this knowledge much more than the saints, much more than the hermits. And that's why Krishna always decides to give this knowledge to the people in responsible positions. So all of us who are well educated, it becomes more, it behooves us, it fits us. We will be decorated if the more intelligent we are, the more educated we are, the more we are interested in spirituality, not the reverse way as is thought of by the common man. It's very important for us to understand this. Krishna himself says in the Bhagavad Gita here that, but in course of time the succession was broken and therefore the science as it is appears to be lost. So he himself detected that yes, at one point of time I had instructed it to some important people, but then due to some reasons it was lost. So he himself detects that this succession was broken and he himself wants to re-establish that succession. It's like you started off some enterprise, you started off some factory, you started off some business and you handed it over to somebody. And then after some time you find out that that person, or due to some reasons, it's not continuing. What would you do? You'd again put all your energy back into it. Is it not? Due to some reasons it did not work out, but now I'm here back. I'll restart it. I'll put all my energy into it. This is something that is happening here. That Krishna instructed it before, but did not work out. Sa kale neha mahata yogo nashta parantapa. It got destroyed. So he's saying, I'll start it again. That is his concern. That is his mood that, alright, no problem. I started it. It got lost. But now I'm willing to start it all over again. He's so optimistic and it is so important for him to give this knowledge to us. If he thought that it was not important for us to understand Bhagavad Gita, he said, anyways, you know, I gave it to him. He gave it to him and he gave it to him and these all were great people and now it appears to be lost, so to hell with it. Forget it. But no, he is saying it's very important. It's the supreme science. In the 9th chapter, he says, Rajavidya Rajguhyam. Rajavidya means, this is the king of all knowledge. And like a king, it deserves to be distributed. If it's that important, it has to be retold again and again. It's that important. So Krishna himself detecting that something has been obstructing the free flow of knowledge before, as distributed before, he has himself come to the rescue and himself is starting off another succession. His mercy and his mood is so magnanimous that not only did he instruct it to these three people mentioned in the first verse and then to Arjun in the present situation, but also he has instructed it to four groups of people, and we know them as the leaders of the four bona fide sampradayas. He has instructed this science to Lakshmi ji, who has Sri Sampradaya. He has instructed this science to Brahma ji, who is the leader of the Brahma Sampradaya. He has instructed this science to Lord Shiva, who has started the Rudra Sampradaya. And he has also instructed this science to the four Kumaras, who have their Kumara Sampradaya. So these four paramparas also he has started. What for? Just in case, if this succession is also broken, let these people give that knowledge. It means he is so concerned about us. He gives it himself. He empowers other people to represent him and spread that knowledge. This knowledge is so important for us. That is the relevance of Bhagavad Gita. That is the importance of Bhagavad Gita. Sva Padmanabhasya Mukhasya Padma. It is explained in Gita Mahatmya. What is the glory of Bhagavad Gita? There are many Vedic scriptures. But what is the special position of Bhagavad Gita? Svayam Padmanabhasya Mukha Padmad. Padmanab is Lord Krishna, Lord Vishnu. So from the self or the own mouth, from his own mouth, some words have been spoken. They are so valuable to us. They are so important for us. All these words that are written in Bhagavad Gita have come from the very own mouth of the Supreme Lord. They are so potent. They are so powerful. That is the special position of Bhagavad Gita, and that's why again and again Krishna wants us to learn this knowledge. Many times in the Bhagavad Gita, if you read it ahead, it says, Bhuya eva mahabaho, shrunu me paramam vacha. Somewhere it comes. He says, I have already spoken to you a lot, but now again I will speak to you. Bhuya eva mahabaho. Again I will tell you something more. Again he speaks something, 7th chapter, 9th chapter, I think 17th chapter also, he says, I have already explained to you a lot, but still, I will explain to you much more. He is so eager to give this to us. Are we eager to receive it? That's a question to be asked. He is so eager that he comes again and again, he empowers other people, just like we have these big brands of clothing and other things. And they open their franchisee showrooms. You see, Reebok showroom, this showroom and that showroom, Big Bazaar showroom. So there is a main person, there is a main business, and they open their franchises all over the place so that many people all over the India can take advantage of their goods. Something like that, that Krishna himself also wants us to learn this Bhagavad Gita, and he also empowers big, big acharyas. Now who are these people? Lakshmi ji, Brahma ji, Lord Shiva, Sanat Kumar, and the other three Kumaras. They are big people, big, honorable, cultured, important people. He has decided to speak the Bhagavad Gita to them. And then he is saying, you pass it on to your disciples. So important for us to have proper understanding of the Bhagavad Gita. What is the best way to know the Bhagavad Gita? For Arjun, it was Krishna himself who was speaking. But for us, we don't have Krishna in front of us, at least physically. He is present in the deity form. He is present in the form of his holy name. But he is not there to speak to us Bhagavad Gita. Arjun had him right there in front of him. So he could ask whatever doubts he had to Krishna. How do we get that knowledge? We have just now seen how Krishna is so eager for us to have that knowledge and how important it is for us to have that knowledge. Now, if he is so eager and it is so important for us, how do we receive it? So that is where the parampara system comes in. And that is what we discussed in the first part of the class, that any knowledge you want to receive, it has always to be received in the parampara system. And so Krishna in his benevolence has started these four paramparas. That he instructed this science to Brahmaji for the Brahma Sampradaya. Brahmaji instructed it to his son Narad Muni. Narad Muni instructed it to his disciple Vyasdev. Vyasdev to Madhvacharya, and so on and so forth. If knowledge is received from one teacher to his student, the student becomes a teacher, passes it on to his student, that student becomes a teacher and passes it on to his student, and so on. In this way, if we receive knowledge, we can be sure that this knowledge that we are receiving now is the same knowledge that Krishna spoke to Arjun. Somebody in the village has a relative working in the city. So the villager wants to send some money, wants to send some message from the village to his relative in the city. He writes a letter, puts it in a post box. The postal system carries that letter to the city post office. The postman picks up that letter and delivers it to the person or the relative in the city. Is there a difference in the contents of the letter that has been just now delivered to the person in the city and the letter that was posted into the postal system by his relative in the village? No. The postal system has just carried out its responsibility to take that letter, transport it to the city, and hand it over to the recipient, proper recipient. The postman never adds anything to the letter. He does not say, oh, nice letter coming from a mother to a son, and he reads it and says, oh, seems like the mother has not blessed her son enough. So he adds his own, I remember you, my blessings. No, he does not do that. Also, he does not subtract anything from the letter. He does not scratch out something from the letter. His job is to just take the letter from the village post office, transport it and hand it over to the relative in the city. Similarly, all these acharyas that are there in the disciplic succession in the parampara, they are doing something similar. Although this particular letter that we are receiving is much more exalted. It's the most important of all letters. It is the most important of all messages. So the person who delivers it also has to be very well qualified. He's not, although we are using this example of a postman, let's not assume that all these acharyas are like postmen. No, their job is much more exalted, as we'll see in the coming discussion. But we could say that just like a postman does not add anything to the message and just does not subtract anything from the message, he delivers the message as it is, delivers the letter as it is. Similarly, all these different acharyas in the four bona fide sampradayas, paramparas, they are delivering to us the same message that Krishna has spoken to Arjun, and that's why this Bhagavad Gita that we have here today is called Bhagavad Gita as it is. This is not Bhagavad Gita as I want it to be, or Bhagavad Gita as seen by my fertile intelligence. No. This is Bhagavad Gita as it is. This is Bhagavad Gita as it was spoken by Krishna to Arjun. We can be very much convinced about this fact because it has been passed down from one teacher to another in parampara, in a disciplic succession. Sometimes we could go to some bookshops and there we could find many editions of Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada mentions once that he had been to a bookshop in the US in the 1970s and there were at least some hundreds of editions of Bhagavad Gita. And today in India also, if you go to some bookshop and say, I want Bhagavad Gita, they will ask you, which Bhagavad Gita? Sounds like a very weird question. These two terms are incongruous. They don't fit, they don't match with each other. Because Bhagavad Gita is Bhagavad Gita. That was spoken by Bhagavan, Lord Krishna, to his devotee Arjun. So when you want Bhagavad Gita, there's only one Bhagavad Gita. So when the bookshop owner asks you which Bhagavad Gita, you should immediately understand that how can somebody ask the question which Bhagavad Gita? What he's intending by asking you that question is Bhagavad Gita translated, commented and twisted by whom? Mr. X, Mr. Y, Mr. Z, Mr. ABC, who? So you have Mr. So-and-so who has given his interpretation of the Bhagavad Gita. You have Mr. Z who has given his interpretation of Bhagavad Gita. Now which particular Bhagavad Gita do you want? Actually, if all the Bhagavad Gitas are honest Bhagavad Gitas, if they are representing the knowledge that has been spoken by Krishna to Arjuna, this question cannot arise. This fundamental question cannot arise, which Bhagavad Gita? He just has to go to the bookshop, inside, take out Bhagavad Gita and give it to you. This is the Bhagavad Gita. But the very question, if it's arising, means you have different interpretations of Bhagavad Gita. People have inserted their own interpretations, their own ideas, their own conceptions into the words of Krishna. Krishna is saying something and people have commented on it saying, actually you know what, when Krishna says this, 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 actually he means this, this, this. A very famous example is that at one point of time, Krishna says, Sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam vraja, aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha yishyami ma shuchaha. He says, surrender unto me and I will deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. So one very, very prominent commentator, a national figure, is not an ordinary man, national figure. His interpretation of Bhagavad Gita says, when Krishna says, surrender unto me, actually what Krishna is saying is, don't surrender to me, but surrender to the unborn, eternal, within Krishna. He's saying, actually Krishna does not say that surrender to me, but you know, that something that is within Krishna, inside of Krishna, and Krishna is outside of that. When Krishna says surrender to me, he is actually pointing to the unborn eternal within Krishna. As if Krishna is a person short of words. As if Krishna has a limited vocabulary. So actually he wants to say surrender to the unborn eternal within me, but then he does not have those words. His vocabulary is limited. So then he has to say surrender to me. So they are imposing their own limitations on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When Krishna is saying me, he says me. It means me. Man mana bhav mad bhakto mad mad mad. Yad karoshi yad ashnasi yad juhoshi dadasi yad tapasyasi kaunteya tat kurushva mad arpanam. It's always me, me, me. All through the Bhagavad Gita you find me. Yet, people who have with their twisted intelligence decided to hand over that twistedness to their readers have purposefully put in their own interpretations in the Bhagavad Gita. So what we have to do is, we have to hear it from the proper sources. We have to hear it from a proper parampara. Somebody could then doubt, alright, I understand it. Either I have to hear it from Krishna or I have to hear it from somebody in a proper parampara. Now, I have some people known to me and they claim that they are in a parampara. How do I know for sure? But Krishna has spoken this Bhagavad Gita 5,000 years back. Here I have people in front of me who claim that they belong to the parampara. Now 5,000 years have passed in between. How do I know whether this parampara is for real or not? There is this electrical socket here, just next to this Vyasasana, or there are some electrical sockets there. And somebody could have a doubt. I have this electrical socket here, is it real? Is it for real or is it just a showpiece? You know, sometimes you could have an electrical socket which does not have a connection behind. It just has those three holes. How do you check whether it's for real or it is just a showpiece? Have to plug in some electrical appliance. Or worse still, if you are impatient, just put your finger in. You'll get the shock of your life. If it works. Similarly, if you want to know whether some person is actually in parampara or not, and he is claiming that he is in parampara, try to understand his teachings. Try to follow those teachings. If you can feel the difference, if you can feel some change in your life, it means this electrical socket is connected to the powerhouse. There is a big powerhouse, there is a big thermal power station, hydro electric power station, nuclear power station somewhere far away from the city. But electricity is consumed in the city. So electricity has to be transported to the city. So in between there are many transformers, there are substations. You see all of them? See, as you pass out of the city, you see these big, big substations where power from the main powerhouse is transported there. There is some voltage step down that takes place. Proper, the sine wave is made proper. Then again it comes to the city. Near all these major establishments, every area has one small transformer. which again regulates the current. So it's produced at the powerhouse, it comes to a substation, substation sends that power to a transformer, and transformer actually gives it to you in a way that you can use it, 220 volts, 50 hertz AC. This is the form in which we can use electricity, is it not? But it's produced at a powerhouse. Something or somebody or some system has to transport that electricity to a place where it is consumed, that is in the city. So these acharyas are like that. They are like the transformers, they are like the substations. And Krishna is the source of all this knowledge. So he is like that powerhouse. He is far, far away from us today. For Arjun, he was there, right in front of him. But for us, he is not there physically. So what do we do then? Krishna is so eager to give it to us, and it's so important for us to have it. So what we have is, we have the mercy of the acharyas, who, in the role of these transformers, in the role of these substations, give to us the same electrical energy that is produced in the powerhouse, but in a way that we can understand it, in a way that we can use it, in a way that we can benefit from it. Very nice example is, Prabhupada always used to give this example of how we can understand that we are not this body, we are spirit soul. And one of his very famous examples that you will find regularly in his books is, just like there is a car outside and it does not move. It's a very advanced assembly of different machines, but on its own it does not move. Unless a living person boards the car, starts the engine, starts driving, the car won't move. Similarly, Prabhupada said, this body is like an assembly of very complicated mechanisms. The eyes work in a very complicated way, the heart works in a very complicated way, the digestive system, the legs, the hands, everything works in a complicated way. But unless the spirit soul is not present, it does not move. Now, you can just think over this question that I am going to ask. In which Upanishad, in which Puran, in which Samhita do you think you will get this example of a car and a driver? To understand that we are not this body, we are spirit soul. Can you think of some Upanishad where you will get this example? No, because simply for the reason that during the Vedic times, when the Vedas were written or compiled by Vyasadeva, there were no cars. So in which Upanishad will you find this example? But the example that is found in the one Upanishad is that of a chariot. That there are five horses, there is a chariot, there is a driver of the chariot, there are the ropes that connect the driver to the horses, and there is the passenger. And there is this whole analogy, how the chariot is like body, the five horses are like the senses, the reins of the horses are like the mind, the driver is the intelligence, and the passenger is the soul. Prabhupada's intelligence, Prabhupada's credit is that he took that analogy. But just try to understand this, if he presents that analogy as it is, here we are sitting for some class and some speaker says, see, we can understand we are not this body, we are spirit soul. Just like you have a chariot and you have horses. I have not seen a chariot. Except in films. Except in comic books, probably. Because in my daily usage, I see cars going by. So if you could explain to me the same analogy in terms of a car, then greater are my chances to understand this analogy properly. That is Prabhupada's intelligence. That is Prabhupada's genius. That he takes the same information, he takes the same knowledge, but gives it to us in a way that we can understand it, we can apply it. Just like a powerhouse produces energy, but that energy, that electrical energy cannot be used by us directly. It's very high voltage. It's very unregulated. The transformers, the substations in between transmit it, transform it in a way that we can use it. So that's the test. How we can understand that not only are we receiving energy from the same powerhouse and we can check it by connecting an appliance, but also that this energy available to us is in a way that we can use it, that we can apply it. Just imagine if you had a huge cable coming to this temple of say 40,000 volts or something and highly unregulated. What would you do with that power? You can't use that power. It has to be in a form that you can use it. That is the special contribution of the acharyas. So if we want to test whether the knowledge that we are receiving is in a parampara or not, just try to hear that knowledge properly, try to apply that knowledge properly, try to understand this knowledge properly. If you see, if you perceive a change in your life, it means this is the proper knowledge. Just like you put your finger in a socket, which is live socket, which is actually connected to the powerhouse, you get a shock. You can't have the same experience. If it's a dead socket, you won't get any experience. So if you are hearing or receiving spiritual science from a person who's not connected to the original source of knowledge, Sri Krishna, you won't have any change, any transformation in your life. Just see around you, if there are people who are following a certain spiritual path and they claim that our path is the best path, look into their lives. Just see what they were before they took to that path and just see what they are after they took to that path. If you see some positive change, that path is for real. If you don't see any change, they are the same people, only thing is they are doing things in a very pious way, but no change of heart. The habits are the same, the character is the same, the behavior is the same. You should understand, it's a dead socket. No use connecting any electrical appliance to that socket. You can only have fun with that socket. Put your finger and say, see, nothing happens. That's it. So there are some points in which, through which we can understand how important it is for us to understand this knowledge and how eager we must be to receive this knowledge and the right way to receive this knowledge in today's time and age. Somebody has any questions? I'll stop here. If somebody has any questions, then we can take some questions or we'll stop here.
Hare Krishna. Pruji, one time in book distribution I came across one person. He was telling that actually it's not very easy to understand Bhagavad Gita. It is something divine that Krishna gave to Arjuna so that he could understand. So you can just tell how can we reply to such queries.
You don't have to reply. What he's saying is true. It is very divine knowledge. You have to accept it. Yes, it's divine. And it's not just, as I said, it's not just some letters printed on paper. Suppose you have a chemistry textbook, you have a physics textbook. Let's talk of some physics textbook. At my time, there was a textbook of thermodynamics by Eastop and McConkie, two famous authors who wrote a textbook on thermodynamics. Let's say I have a 1997 edition of that textbook and I have read it completely. And now the publishers bring out a 2009 edition of that same book by the same authors. Will the content in these two books be the same or different? Something will be updated, is it not? So, some knowledge that is there, some facts that are there, some figures, some findings that are there, some observations that are there in the 2009 edition of that book on thermodynamics, you will not find in the 1997 edition of the same book. So that book, if you have already read 1997 edition, and then they say that there's this new edition and it has new findings, new research, you will have to go through that. You will have to buy that new edition of that book. So that book, that 1997 edition of that book, had a limited capacity to contain knowledge and to transmit knowledge. So the knowledge was limited, and so you read that knowledge and now your capacity to understand that knowledge is full. Now there's no more facts, figures, information in that book. And so if you want more facts, more figures, more information, then you have to purchase the new edition. It's not like that with Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is the same Bhagavad Gita for so many years now. Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita 5,000 years back, at least this edition that we have, that he spoke to Arjun. Now for the past 5,000 years, Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, Shankaracharya and all these acharyas, they are reading the same Bhagavad Gita. There is no 1990 edition of Bhagavad Gita and 2009 edition of Bhagavad Gita. It is the same Bhagavad Gita. Yet, newer and newer lights one can draw from the Bhagavad Gita. You read the Bhagavad Gita today, this same book, the same edition, and you close it. And 10 years down the line, you open this same book, same letters, same pages, same substance. And you read the Bhagavad Gita and you will have a newer understanding of the Bhagavad Gita. How is it? If it is an ordinary book, if it is a limited book, then you will not get newer and newer lights. But because this is a book about consciousness, what happens is today you read the Bhagavad Gita and you don't actually read these letters like you would in a physics textbook, in a thermodynamics textbook. Here when you read these letters, actually the letters reciprocate with you, the knowledge reciprocates with you as per your consciousness. So if you have a humble consciousness before reading the Bhagavad Gita, it reveals to you more. So you have certain consciousness today. You are a devotee and you are eager to learn the Bhagavad Gita and you open it and you read it. So based on your level of consciousness, the Bhagavad Gita reveals itself to you at a certain level. Now you closed it and for 10 years you practiced devotional service. By practicing of devotional service, in due course of time you chanted Hare Krishna, you served the devotees, you carried out your services that were allotted to you. So you got purified. Your consciousness level rose. So after 10 years, when you open the same book, now this book reciprocates with you at this level. So that's why, because of purified consciousness, now you find many more things. Oh, I didn't know this. Oh, this is how I can understand this. Now your understanding of the same book, the same shloka, the same translation, the same letters is different. Whereas for a physics, for a chemistry textbook, that cannot be, it can never be true. Because there is no consciousness related subject matter in a physics textbook. All that it says is chlorine's atomic number is 35 and sometimes 36. So sometimes, you know, it's taken as an average 35.5. Sodium, potassium, what are the atomic numbers? They'll say all that stuff. So it does not depend on your consciousness. The knowledge that is presented in any mundane textbook does not have any relation with your consciousness. You may be a thug. You may be a crook. You may be a ruffian, and still you can understand the knowledge that is presented in a chemistry textbook. Does not demand any consciousness prerequisite from your side. However, when a ruffian reads the Bhagavad Gita, he will not understand anything because he does not have that proper attitude to learn it. And when a person in proper consciousness approaches the Bhagavad Gita and reads it, Bhagavad Gita reveals itself to him. Depends on your consciousness. So what he's saying is true. The other part of his question that he said is, so it's divine, and if it's divine, it's very tough. Till here, he is true. It's tough, yes, because this is not an ordinary book. But the later part that he said, that so you cannot understand it, is very false. Because it's a simple thing. If you cannot understand this book, because it's divine, because it's special, why would Krishna reveal it to you then? Why does Krishna speak it again and again to different acharyas? He will say, see, I have some knowledge which is very special, which is very divine, but it's very difficult for you ordinary mortal souls. I keep that knowledge with me only. You understand? I am a big teacher of some subject, say painting, and I have got a lot of special knowledge. And I think nobody in this world can understand this knowledge. So I don't reveal it. Why would I reveal it? I know for sure nobody can understand this knowledge. I'll not reveal it. But the eagerness, like we saw in the class, if you were there for the first part, Krishna is eager. He started it before, Sakale Neha Mata Yoga Nashta Paranda, but it got destroyed. Again he says, okay, it got destroyed, no problem, I'll start it again. He gave it to Arjun. He's saying, Imam Rajarsho Yudhu, many Rajarshis, many saintly kings have received this knowledge. Then he gave it to these four people. He says, distribute this knowledge. He's eager to give this knowledge to us. And he is the source of that knowledge. He is the person, Suva Padmanabhasya Mukhasya, we just saw. So, I am the source of that knowledge and I am so eager to give this knowledge to people. Why would I be eager to give something to people which they cannot digest, which they cannot understand, which they cannot comprehend? Is Krishna foolish to give this knowledge to us again and again, to harbor that eagerness in his heart? Oh, it got destroyed last time, now I will give it to you again. I'll give it to you. Please distribute this knowledge. He's so eager for this knowledge to be distributed. It means he thinks and he has a proper understanding of the knowledge that yes, it is divine, yes, it is special, but if received in the way that I want it to be received, that is through the parampara system, it can be properly understood. You get the point? The point is, if it is too difficult for us to understand, Krishna will not speak it. Krishna will never have eagerness to distribute it. This is such a foolish argument. that is so special, it's so divine, so we cannot understand it. It's from the lotus mouth of the Supreme Lord Himself. Who are we? We are just fallen souls, so we cannot understand it. If we are so fallen, Krishna will not give it to us. Get this point? So when it is special, it is divine, but when Krishna is so eager to give it to us, we should understand the person who has that knowledge wants it to be distributed, means it is within us to accept that knowledge and to benefit from the knowledge. The limitation is on our part, not on Krishna's part. Krishna has made all arrangements for us to receive that knowledge, to understand that knowledge, and to realize that knowledge. He has himself come again and again. He has given this book. He has empowered his acharyas for this knowledge to be distributed. Now it is up to us whether we come up to his expectations, receive that knowledge and benefit from it. This is not an argument. It's so divine, so special that we cannot understand it. Not a good argument. Well, it seems like there are no other questions. I'll stop here. Thank you so much for your patient listening. Thank you so much. Srila Prabhupada ki, Shri Shri Radha Gopinath Bhagavan ki, Anant Koti Vaishnava Vrinda ki, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki,